Nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello, good evening to you listening to Nationwide. My name is Sunny Martin. We are coming to you live from Juba, and this evening we are honored to have the UK Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan, Clara Stanton, and she is visiting Juba to engage with the government officials, civil society, and members of the diplomatic community. As we are all aware that the implementation of the peace process has been facing series of challenges over the past few months, and efforts are being done from all corners to ensure that South Sudan remains stable and the people enjoy the dividend of peace. And this is one of the discussions we are going to have this evening. So what is the impact of her visit to South Sudan at this particular moment when everyone is looking for a sustainable peace right now? And I'm joined here in the studio by the UK Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan, Clara. Good evening, and thank you so much for coming during your busy schedule. Welcome to South
Thank
Sudan.
Thank you. It's really good to be here. It's always a pleasure to come to Juba and to come to South Sudan.
Okay. And this is your first time ever since you were appointed to...
No, this is my second time since I was appointed as a UK Special Representative. I came very early in 2024, but this is actually the second time I've worked on South Sudan. I worked on South Sudan from 2018 until 2021, and so I started my role then the week that they signed the revitalized agreement in Khartoum, and so I feel that I've, you know, had a good exposure to the issues facing South Sudan, and it's good to be engaged again.
Okay, and what is the purpose or the main objectives of your visit this time to South Sudan?
Well, I think my visit, I mean, as I say, it's always a pleasure to come to Juba for its own sake, and I only arrived this morning, so I've only started my meetings today. But the purpose of my visit, as you say, there are many challenges facing the peace process. We were listening to the news just now, and you can tell from the headlines in the news some of the challenges that are facing your country right now. I think we are concerned about the security. We are concerned about developments in terms of the government. And I think perhaps most importantly, concerned about the levels of humanitarian need that are rising across the country. So I think the purpose of my visit is to see the government and see other partners and civil society to talk about these challenges.
So who have we met so far?
Well, as I say, I only arrived. I arrived maybe, I don't know, 5-6 hours ago.
Yeah.
And I've had a busy day. I saw Foreign Minister Kumba earlier. He was very generous with his time. We talked about a lot of these challenges that I've touched on. I met him before. He came to the London Sudan conference in April, so it was good to speak to him again. And I saw representatives from the AU and from IGAD, and I think that reflects how important we see these regional organizations in helping South Sudan. I think the role of IGAD and the AU is really, really critical.
So who do you expect to meet next after meeting the foreign minister?
I think I hope to see more government ministers tomorrow. I think my schedule is still being finalised, but I also hope to see other members of the diplomatic community. Obviously, as the UK, the Troika is very important, so I will be seeing Troika partners. And very important to say, as we sit here in Radio Miraya, that the UN and UNMISS is a key partner and friend for us on South Sudan, so I will be having meetings here at UNMISS as well.
What about the partners to the agreement? Are you also scheduled to meet them?
Do you mean IO?
Yes, IO, almost all the five parties to the agreement, those who signed the 2018 agreement. Are you expected to also meet some of them?
I think we are hoping to meet some. We were going to meet today the Minister for Mining, but that had to be cancelled because the Foreign Minister was so generous with his time that has been moved, but I hope to meet him tomorrow. And to be able to talk to him about the position of the IO and about the position of Dr. Riek Machar and his status, because that is obviously a very important and critical development.
What is the UK's general overview of the way the agreement is being implemented, given the fact that South Sudan is edging towards election next year.
Sorry, I missed that last bit.
Yeah, what is your overview on how the implementation of this agreement is progressing, given the fact that the country is moving towards an election in 2026?
Well, I think, as I say, I've been working on South Sudan on and off since the agreement was signed in Khartoum in 2018. And I think there have always been conversations about delays to implementation. We have often expressed concern as the UK and as the Troika about these delays. We were sad to see the delay to elections the first time. We were even more sad when the delay to elections happened last year. So I think our concerns about delays to implementation are well recorded. Obviously, the developments most recently this year are also, I think, extremely serious and extremely worrying. It is a power-sharing agreement. That is the purpose of it. And to share the power, the people who signed it need to be in the government. That feels like a fairly basic requirement. Having said that, I think we still see the agreement as the best architecture and structure for peace. And so I think one of the reasons I'm here now is to encourage those I meet to recommit to the peace agreement, because, as you say, I think elections at the end of next year are such an opportunity and are so critical. And I don't think anyone in the international community wants to see a further delay. And I don't think anyone here in South Sudan wants to see that either.
Right. And talking about everyone in this country knows about the challenges this agreement is facing at the moment. What is the support of the UK government in ensuring that a sustainable peace is achieved in this country?
Well, I think we support the agreement and efforts towards peace in many different ways. We have been engaged in South Sudan, you know, since the days of the CPA, diplomatically and politically. We have been very committed and very engaged. Most recently, our previous development minister, the first visit that she did in the new government was to come to South Sudan. And I think that reflects the level of political interest in London. But as well as these political and diplomatic efforts as the UK and through the Troika, we have been committed in terms of our programming. And our support to the humanitarian effort, I think, is critical to peace. And I think we are one of the largest donors in South Sudan. We also, of course, support through our membership of the UN and particularly at the Security Council. We support UNMISS, and we see UNMISS as a critical enabler and supporter of peace in South Sudan.
And I am sure you have been following the development in this country over the last 3 months. There has been renewed violence in some parts of the country. And is the UK concerned about the renewed violence in some parts of the country that has led to massive displacement?
Yes, we are very concerned. I think South Sudan has suffered from violence in different areas for many years for different reasons. But I think the violence we have seen this year in Upper Nile feels different. It feels more serious. I think we are seeing heavy artillery and attacks being made against civilian populations. I think we are very worried by this. As you said, I also work on Sudan, where obviously we have seen 2 years of appalling conflict. And the worst case scenario for us when we think about the developments in South Sudan this year is that we see a situation like Sudan developing here.
And we have also seen a lot of efforts by the region, the African Union. We had the panel of the wise visiting Juba, and they also had the Ugandan president. He was here. He spent the night. What role do you think the region and international partners can play in preventing further escalation of violence in this country?
I think, I mean, as I say, I went to IGAD and the AU here today on my first day, and I've actually just been in Addis seeing AU colleagues. And I think the role of the AU and of IGAD and of the neighbouring countries in the region is absolutely critical. And I think we've been, from the UK, very encouraged by, as you say, the level of engagement and the seniority of engagement that we've seen from the region in the months since the outbreak of fighting in Upper Nile. So I think there is really encouraging unity and commitment from the region. Somebody said to me today in one of my meetings that, you know, maybe sometimes we disagree on the tactics, but everyone is agreed on the objective. And the objective is successful implementation, and that leads to elections. But I have to say, I think the international community in the region and IGAD can only do so much, right? It is up to the leadership in South Sudan. Nothing from outside can compensate for the lack of political will.
Right. And there has been a lot of calls from all corners urging the parties to the agreement to return back to negotiating table, engage in a constructive dialogue, and find a way to exit from this, what the term is, a political deadlock. Mm-hmm. Does the UK support the call for dialogue?
Yes, 100%. I think we always support a call for dialogue where there is conflict and where there is disagreement. And I think dialogue is the only way. As you say, this feels like a bit of a deadlock. This dialogue is the only way to move beyond that.
Mm. And at the moment, as like I said, so many efforts. We have seen people coming to Juba and going back, mm-hmm. but no change.
No.
Yes. What impact will your coming to Juba have, maybe in ensuring that the country moves forward? Because, like I said, we had the Ugandan president, we have the AU, wise panel of the wise. We even had an envoy from Kenya, the former prime minister of Kenya.
Indeed.
Yes,
indeed.
Raila Odinga, he was here, but things are not moving forward.
I certainly wouldn't claim to have the influence or impact of President Museveni or the former Kenyan Prime Minister, but I think it's about combined effort and contribution slowly of this messaging over time, building the pressure and building international consensus. So I think each of these visits and every time we deliver these messages, it helps, we hope, a little bit. But as I say, we can only do so much, and what we can do is quite limited. It's about the South Sudanese leadership. But I think another point of my visit is to come here and to see what is happening and to go back to London and to talk to our ministers and to be able to reflect what is going on in Juba.
Yes, and I'm sure this is you are just 6 hours in the country. You have already met the Minister of Foreign Affairs. You have been briefed by your staffs here in your Juba embassy. You also have a picture of how things are looking like in this country. Mm-hmm. We have leaders who are behind bars, who are detained. We have leaders who have left the country, leaders who are in hiding. What is the best way, according to the UK government, what is the best way of exiting this stalemate we are in right now in terms of the implementing the agreement? What's the way forward?
I mean, I think it is not necessarily for us, for the UK, or for me to give detailed advice, but I think you said it before. It must be through a path of dialogue, and what that dialogue looks like or who leads it, I think, is, again, up to the region. It is up to IGAD. It is an IGAD agreement. So we are not here to prescribe and sort of set out a plan. We are here to encourage and to listen and to deliver messages around our concern.
Okay. And at the end of your visit, what are your expectations?
What is my expectation of my visit?
Yes, at the end of the day, when you go back.
When I go back, I hope that I will understand the situation here better. So I will be better informed. I hope that the government here will understand our position as the UK better, because obviously we are a significant donor here. We have a historic relationship helping the South Sudanese people. And so I think we want our voice to be heard by the government. So I hope that I will have achieved that as well. And I hope that I will have got to spend some time in Juba, because I'm always very pleased to be here.
Okay. And talking about, maybe you can clarify to our listeners, what is the position of the UK at the moment regarding the political situation in the country? What is the position of the UK at the moment?
we would like to see the issue of Riek Machar and his house arrest being resolved. We would like to see him being released. Failing that, we would like to see him put on trial quickly and in accordance with South Sudan's legal processes. We would like to see the government and the transitional, I have to say and emphasize, the transitional government of national unity again be a transitional government of national unity to return to those principles that underpinned the agreement. And we would like to see clear progress and commitment being made to elections in 2026.
All right. If you have just joined us right now, you're listening to Nationwide. My name is Sani Martin, and in the studio, I have the UK Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan, Clara Stanton, and she's visiting Juba. She arrived in the country today, and so far she has met the Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation today, and she's expected to meet more of the government officials, diplomats, women group, civil society in the coming days before she goes back. And also, like you have heard from her, dialogue is the best way forward, and you have heard a lot. You can send us your comment or question to our SMS number 0912-177-141. The number once again for you to send your comment or your question to is 0912-177-141 is the number for you to send your comment, and I will be reading the questions right here. Yes, Special Envoy, the question now is, like you said, the UK government is one of the major donors, not today, not yesterday, for a very long time. And given the conflict in the country, every sector have been affected in the country. How is the UK supporting the health and education sector in the country?
So our priority has been to support the humanitarian sector because, as we said earlier, we are so concerned about the rising risks of famine. But we have been historic supporters of the health and education sectors in South Sudan through substantial long-running programs. I remember I went in 2019. I traveled with the then ambassador to Bor, and we went to a girls' school, and we saw girls who were able to go to school because of UK funding, and they did a play for us about how pleased they were that they could go to school. And I always remember that when I come back to South Sudan, and I remember being so, so moved by that. And I know that we have been so pleased to support girls going to school for many, many years.
Right. What about the health sector?
So the health sector, we lead a program, the Health Pooled Fund, which is the largest public healthcare program in South Sudan. So I think that supports over 500 health facilities, 4,000 community health workers. That's across seven states in the country. And I think we've had a focus within that on maternal health, in under five mortality rates. We've also focused on provision of vaccines for the South Sudanese. So that's over a million children treated for childhood diseases and over 300,000 children vaccinated. So again, it makes me proud to think that there are girls who've gone to school and children who've been vaccinated because of our work here in South Sudan.
Yes, we have read from the humanitarian partners that over 70% of the population of this country are in need of humanitarian assistance. What are the supports the UK government is rendering to the aid agencies who are supporting those in need in this country?
So overall, UK humanitarian development spending for last year was over £130 million. The majority of that went to humanitarian. Last year, we announced when our minister came, I mentioned the visit of our Minister for Development. She came, she went to Bentiu. I spoke to her when she got back, and she was really very moved by what she saw. That particularly, actually, I think something worth highlighting, the impact of climate change and the flooding. When she was here in Bentiu, she announced a package of support of 69 million. And I think when we are talking about the humanitarian crisis, I'd be keen to mention Sudan. As I say, I also cover Sudan. And I know that South Sudan and the South Sudanese have been really generous in welcoming Sudanese refugees and returnees across the border, but that has obviously put a greater burden on the country. So we have responded to that as well as part of our humanitarian response.
Yes, despite the challenges facing South Sudan, given the conflict in Sudan that has taken 2 years right now, over 500,000 people have fled to South Sudan, and South Sudan has taken a significant number of refugees, not only from Sudan, but from the neighboring DRC, from Ethiopia, and all this. How is the UK government supporting South Sudan in accommodating these refugees?
Well, I think through our humanitarian programming is supporting communities on the border with Sudan. And so the figures that I mentioned, 134 million, is helping to support returnees and refugees. We don't really distinguish between who is the beneficiary of our assistance.
Okay, and still looking forward now, is the UK offering any specific assistance to help South Sudan manage the humanitarian impact of this influx of Sudanese refugees into Sudan, including the returnees? You know, there are so many South Sudanese who are returning to South Sudan as a result of the 2 years conflict in Sudan.
We will continue to offer support. I can't really speculate on figures in the future. That's not my job, and they've not been set yet. But our Foreign Secretary and our Prime Minister, in fact, has said that supporting, well, responding to the crisis in Sudan and supporting the countries that are providing assistance is a priority for the UK and will remain one of our development and humanitarian priorities, along with the conflict in Gaza and the war in Ukraine.
Okay, and I know you have a very busy and tight schedule. Before we let you go, we have a couple of SMS with some questions coming in here. I will sample some of them. This one is coming from Jackson here in Juba, and he says, welcome to South Sudan, UK's personal envoy. You have mentioned that there is need for the release of Dr. Riek Machar, and if he's found guilty, he should be taken to a competent court and be tried according to the law of the land. Is that what you will be presenting to the government officials you are going to be meeting in the coming days?
Yes. I mean, it isn't for us to, again, advise a government on their legal proceedings. But we would just urge that any judicial process is open, is free, and is fair.
Okay. Deng Machar is saying, the country, like you said, is expected to conduct election at the end of 2026. In what way will the UK support the country in conducting its first ever election in 2026? What are the supports?
Well, I think I would say, firstly, at the moment, sadly, that feels slightly premature for us to be thinking about planning for elections, because it does not feel like the government has done enough for us to be completely confident that elections will take place as planned. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, that is the outcome that we all want. But when the time comes, I think we would say our election support, as I say, there's political support and diplomatic support from our embassy here and our ambassador. In terms of more specific practical support, I think we'd see UNMISS as very much the organisation that supports the government in delivering elections. That's in their mandate. And so when the time comes, I think we will work closely with them.
And this one is from Malakal, up in Isle State. He says the UK and the Troika seems to be doing very little in putting pressure on the parties to ensure that the agreement is implemented in spirit and letter. Even some people have accused the UK and the Troika of double standard. Is it time now for Troika, including the UK, to put more pressure and change their strategies of engaging with the South Sudan leaders?
That's a very interesting question. And I don't know what double standards, you know, double standards in relation to what. But I think in terms of pressure, I mean, I am here and we are engaging. I think we always try to have constructive conversations with the government, because I think focusing on actions and focusing on the future and trying to encourage that dialogue is a better approach than, you know, than withdrawing and with failing to engage. So we will always engage rather than not engage. But I hope that our voice contributes to the messaging that is being given by others.
Okay. And this question, all right, this one here is coming in also from Juba here. It says, what impact, according to the UK government, as you are the special envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, what are the impacts of the ongoing conflict in Sudan on South Sudan? Oof.
This is a very good...
From Deng.
From
yeah,
Deng.
Yes.
Well, that's a very good and important question, I think, from Deng. And earlier this year, we hosted a London conference on Sudan, and in fact, the foreign minister came to that, and he was able to give the South Sudanese perspective on the conflict, because I think that's really, really important. I think the impact of the conflict in Sudan raises the risks here. I think there is a worst-case scenario where the violence here and the violence there become linked and exacerbate each other. I hope very much that that does not come to pass. But I think the conflict in Sudan makes us and the region more worried about South Sudan and more determined that we cannot see South Sudan go the way of Sudan.
Okay, and still, is it now time for the international community to put more pressure on the Sudanese government and those warring parties to ensure that peace comes to Sudan? Because whatever happens, Sudan can easily, or have already even spilled to South Sudan and other neighboring countries. Peace in Sudan means peace in South Sudan and also in the region. And economically, we depend on Sudan.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always very fascinating, the links between the two countries. Obviously, people in Sudan have a history here, and people here have a history in Sudan. I mean, I feel I can't, if I start talking about the conflict in Sudan now, we'll be here all evening. So sorry, remind me of your question.
Yes, no, he was just trying to find out about, don't you think it's time for peace to come to Sudan? So that's...
Yes, I do think it's time for peace to come to Sudan. But I think the situation in Sudan is incredibly complex. I think it is maybe more complex than the situation here. I think there is a regional dimension. The location of Sudan, where it sits in Africa, means that it is a local conflict, it is a national conflict, it is a regional conflict, and it is even an international conflict. And so I think the range of partners and the range of countries makes it very difficult. But absolutely, I think it is time for there to be peace in Sudan.
Okay. And finally, before we hear your final message, there is a donor fatigue across the world, and the UK is also facing its own challenges. We have war in Gaza. We have war all over the world. With all this donor fatigue, is the UK expected to continue supporting South Sudan?
Yes, I think we are expected to continue supporting South Sudan. You are right that funding is reducing. That is a trend across different donor countries, and it is a trend for us as well. And it is possible that our support will change, but I don't think it is going to end. As I say, I think the humanitarian crisis here and the crisis in Sudan and how they relate mean that we will continue to be committed in terms of humanitarian funding a while.
Okay. What is your final message?
My final message?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not sure I would give a final message to your listeners. I mean, I'm very pleased to be here today. But I think my message would be to the political leadership. And that is my message coming here, to live up to the expectations of your people and of your country. This is such a beautiful place. I'm always so happy to arrive in Juba that I don't think South Sudan has yet been able to realise its potential. And so my message would be to the leadership to make that happen.
All right. Thank you so much for actually taking time from your busy
schedule. You are very welcome.
And coming to us. We hope to talk to you at the end of your visit to South Sudan. Thank you so much for coming
back. Thank you.